Welcome, everyone, and thank you for standing by. All participants have been placed on the listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Alan Grant, Chief of the News Media Branch. You may begin.
Thank you, Wendy. Good afternoon. I wish to thank you all for joining us for today's release of the 2013 National Youth Risk Behavior Survey, a survey conducted among high school students in grades 9 through 12 every other year. Here to discuss the survey are CDC Director Tom Frieden and Dr. Stephanie Zaza, Director of CDC's Division of Adolescent and School Health. Dr. Zaza's last name is spelled Z-A-Z-A. Following their remarks, we'll take questions. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Dr. Frieden.
Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us. I'm Tom Frieden, Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Today, we're releasing results from the 2013 National Youth Risk Behavior Survey, what we call the YRBS. The YRBS is really important because it tells us what high school kids across the country are doing relating to the things that most affect their health. And the data being released today helps us understand how risky behaviors among youth vary across the country and over time. The bottom line is we're encouraged to see that high school students are making better choices in some areas like smoking and fighting and alcohol use. For the first time since the survey began, current cigarette smoking levels among high school students has dropped to 15.7%. That meets the Healthy People 2020 objective of under 16%, and that's good news. But we still face big challenges in reducing overall tobacco use because cigars and smokeless tobacco and e-cigarette use are very concerning trends. We know it's easier and more effective if you develop healthy behaviors during childhood rather than trying to change them during adulthood. Or another way to put it, it's a whole lot easier to never start smoking than it is to quit. Preventable risk behaviors such as smoking are often established during childhood or adolescence, and they continue into adulthood. We know that hard-hitting media campaigns such as our Tips from Former Smokers campaign and FDA's new youth-focused campaign help prevent kids from starting to smoke and help smokers quit. And while this particular report doesn't have data on e-cigarette use among high school students, we know that use of e-cigarettes is skyrocketing, and we're concerned about that. And we're particularly concerned with e-cigarettes re-glamorizing smoking traditional cigarettes and maybe making it more complicated to enforce smoke-free laws that protect all non-smokers. Young people are highly vulnerable to social, environmental, and physical influences that encourage them to start smoking, and no kids should be exposed to advertising that glorifies the use of nicotine or be able to easily buy e-cigarettes because their sales have not been restricted. In addition to smoking, I'm also encouraged to see the reduction in the proportion of high school kids who are currently sexually active, which is defined as having had sex within the previous 3 months. That proportion has gone down from almost 38% to 34%. We still think it's too high, but at least the trend is going in the right direction. However, among kids who are currently sexually active, condom use has declined slightly in the past decade after seeing increases throughout the 1990s. It's gone from 63% in 2003 to 59% in 2013. And that shows the need for continued efforts from parents, schools, and communities to educate and ensure that staff have the knowledge and skills they need to protect themselves from HIV, STDs, and teen pregnancy. There's no one simple solution to reducing the prevalence of health risk behaviors among high school students, but we owe it to our kids to help them make healthy choices easier. Families, schools, communities, and young people all play a part working together for the next generation. It's not too much to ask that every kid born in this country reaches adulthood without an infection that they will have to deal with for the rest of their life, without nicotine addiction, and at a healthy weight. And on that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Stephanie Zaza for further remarks.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden, and thank you all for joining us for today's call. This is Stephanie Zaza. I'm Director of the Division of Adolescent and School Health at CDC. CDC conducts the national YRBS among a national sample of approximately 13,000 U.S. high school students. In addition, 42 states and 21 large urban school districts conducted their own YRBS, and results from these surveys are also included in the report that we're releasing today. The YRBS tells us what kids do, but not why. Its purpose is to identify the major public health risk behaviors among our nation's high school students and to track those behaviors over time. These health risk behaviors include unintentional injuries and violence, sexual behaviors that contribute to unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV infection, tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use, unhealthy dietary behaviors, and physical inactivity. I would like to again thank Dr. Frieden for sharing the important findings on smoking and sexual behavior among youth. As he mentioned in his overview, there are encouraging improvements in cigarette smoking among high school students, but not so many changes in other uses of tobacco. There are similarly encouraging findings in that fewer students are currently sexually active, but among those students, fewer are using condoms. I'd like to now share a few additional findings from this year's report. Other promising news is that physical fighting has declined substantially during the last 20 years. The percent of students nationwide who had been in a physical fight one or more times during the past 12 months before the survey went from 42% in 1991 to 25% in 2013. Also, fights on school property were cut in half from 16% in 1993 to 8% in 2013. These findings show that violence prevention is possible, and more work is needed to bring these rates even lower. Texting while driving continues to be a concern. Teen drivers have the highest proportion of distraction-related fatal crashes, and among those distractions, texting while driving can take the driver's attention away from driving more frequently and for longer periods than other distractions. This puts them and other drivers at risk. Nationwide, 41% of students who had driven a car or other vehicle during the past 30 days reported texting or emailing while driving. Teen drivers need to avoid any task that takes their attention away from driving, including texting or emailing while driving. Parents can play an active role in keeping their teen driver safe by close monitoring, frequent discussions, parent-teen driving agreements, and acting as a role model of good driving habits. Other technologies also affect youth health risk behaviors. We know that excessive screen time, such as TV, computer, or video game use, is associated with chronic disease risk factors such as obesity. While TV watching for more than 3 hours a day decreased from 43% in 1999 to 32% in 2013, computer use for more than 3 hours a day for non-school related work nearly doubled from 22% in 2003 to 41% in 2013. This year's YRBS report clearly shows that fewer high school students are engaging in some very important health risk behaviors, but there is still progress to be made. Although there's no single solution to reducing health risk behaviors among high school students, we can all work collaboratively to help address the health risks using interventions that are based on the best science available. To aid these efforts, CDC works with other federal agencies, national and non-governmental organizations, state and local education and health agencies to do a number of things. First, to identify and monitor school health policies and programs. Second, to conduct research to increase the effectiveness of interventions. Third, enable partners to plan programs and implement interventions that benefit students. And finally, to evaluate the impact of those interventions over time. The YRBS is an important tool for understanding health risk behaviors among youth. As such, we're encouraged by the improvements that we see in many of the health risk behaviors highlighted in this report, including the decreases in current cigarette use, current sexual behavior, and physical fighting among youth. We hope that public health professionals, educators, youth service providers, policymakers, and parents can use these data to guide their planning decisions. Schools and communities can also work to reduce youth health risk behaviors that are still prevalent and monitor those that are newly emerging. So thanks again for joining us today, and I can turn it back over to our coordinator. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden, and thank you, Dr. Zaza. Operator, at this time, we're now ready for questions.
Thank you. At this time, to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. You will be prompted to record your name. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question today is from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. I had two, actually. The first one, this survey was done during the time period September 2012 through all of 2013, if I read that correctly. That was a time period that included the killings at the school in Newtown, Connecticut. I was wondering if you all could comment on whether you thought that incident or other gun violence incidents in U.S. schools had impacted any of these statistics, specifically fights in schools or the increase in the kids who said they did not go to school because of safety concerns.
I'll begin, and Dr. Zaza may want to say more. It is striking that while we've had these terrible incidents around the U.S., at the same time, the findings on physical fighting are really quite encouraging, and they're consistent over time. So we think they're a reliable indicator of what's happened. Basically, we've seen the proportion of kids in a physical fight in school or elsewhere during the previous year down from 42.5% in 1991 to 32.8% in 2011. And these are substantial declines that show that violence prevention is possible. What's even more striking is that in the past 20 years, fights on school property have been cut in half, exactly half, from 16.2% to 8.1%. But even with those declines, one in four high school students report being in at least one physical fight in the past year, and there's more that's needed. I will highlight one of the other trends here having to do with alcohol use. We do see a reduction in alcohol use in some of the measures, and we know that alcohol use contributes to a large number of risky behaviors, including fighting. Dr. Zaza?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. Just a correction. The national survey was conducted in the spring and fall terms of 2013 only. Spring only of 2013, I apologize. So just to put the timing of the survey in context, time-wise, these data also really cannot tell us the why, as you know. They tell us what students are doing but can't really give us a sense of why these behaviors are happening. I would also point to some of the other data around violence that indicate a stable sort of unchanging effect in some of the other areas of violence, such as carrying weapons. So I think there are sort of mixed findings here. While physical fighting demonstrates that there are things that clearly are working, there are some other areas where we still have quite a bit to do.
Can I ask one more, the follow-up? You all added bullying, a question on bullying a few years ago. Did that, someone suggested to me that maybe the appearance of a question on bullying on the survey, I don't know if it was earlier in the survey than the question on have you been in a fight, may have caused some kids to think of an incident and use the bullying descriptor to describe it rather than a physical fight descriptor. Is that? Do you think that was a factor or no?
I don't think it's possible to say. In terms of how students respond to that, the bullying question does come after the physical fighting question on the questionnaire, so it's a little hard to know if students are reading ahead, for example, how they would read into that.
Next question, operator.
The next question is from David Beasley with Reuters News Service.
Yes. Is the texting while driving up or down, or just the first time it was on the survey? I looked through it. I couldn't see an actual number for the previous, for 2011.
Dr. Zaza?
Yes, this is a relatively newly changed question, so we don't have long-term trends on that.
Okay, so around 40%, I think you said?
Yes, 41%.
Okay. Thank you.
We're ready for our next question, operator.
The next question is from Mike Estrell with Wall Street Journal.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about the long-term decline in alcohol use and what you think is causing that. There was obviously the increase in the minimum drinking age in the late mid to late 1980s, but nothing happened in the 1990s, and then we see the sharp decline through the 2000s. What do you attribute that to?
Well, in terms of, I'll start. Clearly, the graduated driver licenses and the rise in the legal age of consumption have made a big difference in youth smoking. If you look at drunk driving or alcohol impaired driving, and of course, any alcohol on board with someone who's under 21 and driving is illegal.
Okay.
If you look at that, those trends are really encouraging. We've seen very substantial decreases in the proportion of kids who are driving under the influence. So we do see positive trends there. Let me ask Dr. Zaza to say more, and then I'll say some things at the end. Dr. Zaza?
I agree. I think the important findings of students reporting ever having drunk alcohol, students reporting currently drinking alcohol, and students reporting binge drinking have made tremendous decreases over the past decade, and that's very important. Again, it's very hard, it's impossible to attribute why that's happening from these data, but there have been a number of important changes that speak to the possible impact of new laws and public health interventions.
Thank you.
Ready for our next question?
The next question is from Kim Painter with USA Today.
Before we get to the next question, I would just comment that one of the hints here is a huge difference between jurisdictions. The rates range quite a bit between different places, and so there are parts of the country that have done a better job with a combination of policies on underage drinking, school policies, parental involvement. All of these things really can make a difference. Sorry, next question.
Thank you. The next question is from Kim Painter with USA Today.
Yes, hi. My question was also about the texting and driving, looking for some comparison data. I believe you first asked the question nationally in 2011, and I don't see that number in the report, so I'm wondering if you even have that one-time comparison between 2011 and 2013?
Thank you for that question. We actually changed the question between 2011 and 2013, so we can't report a trend on that.
Okay.
Next question, please.
As a reminder, to ask a question, you may press star 1. The next question is from Michael Smith with MedPage Today.
Good afternoon. I'm just the whole TV screen time, computer screen time thing. I wondered if that's broken down at all, because I know that many young people of my acquaintance don't watch television anymore. They watch television programs on their computers. So I'm wondering if we're just seeing a shift in television watching from one medium to another. Is there any data on that? Can you make any speculate at all?
Yes, this is actually two separate questions. So when we ask questions about the time that students watch TV, what we're seeing is a pretty dramatic drop in students who watched 3 or more hours of TV on an average school day, and that's dropped from 43% to 32%. Unfortunately, we see that students may be replacing that behavior with using a computer for 3 or more hours a day for non-school-related work, and that's nearly doubled from 22% to 41%. So you're right, those are actually two separate questions, and we can look at those separately. I would also mention that the computer question includes a set of examples that includes a lot of different things. So computers, tablets, smartphones, anything that is sort of an interactive type of technology that involves screen time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just add to that, we are concerned by the amount of screen time. It cuts into time for physical activity. It cuts into time for sleep. It cuts into time for interacting in a healthy way with friends and learning. So it's a trend that we're noting. And some of this is undoubtedly, as your friends or the teens you know indicate, a shift from watching TV on the television to watching it on the computer screen, but it's still a whole lot of time being inactive, and that's a concern.
We're ready for our next question.
The next question is from Alice Park with Time.
I just wanted to address on a couple of fronts with, let's say, the sexual activity and even the screen time. What does that change, or the changes that you're seeing there? It seems like in some cases the teens are switching or turning from one type of behavior to another. Like with the sexual activity, for example, does that indicate at all how public messaging, public health messaging might be more refined? Any lessons there to learn about how those things might be reformulated in a way to address things like lower condom use, even if they are having less sex?
Well, in terms of the screen time, and I'll have to drop off the call shortly, but in terms of the screen time, it does highlight new areas where we need to focus on promoting health and limiting negative influences on kids. And this is a place where parents have as throughout a kid's life, parents have a very important role to play. And I think the increase in screen time brings opportunities for kids to learn things and for kids to engage with others, but also brings real risks that we need to be alert to, and a role for parents to be very involved. Dr. Zaza?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. Alice, you've actually struck upon a really important use of these data, which is to be able to watch these trends over time to address continuing issues of risk behavior, but also to be aware of what's changing in the way students behave and making sure we're asking the right questions. So as the questionnaire evolves over time, make sure that we're asking new questions about new behaviors and keeping up with those so that we can use these data to target our messages appropriately, to work with the people who can influence teens, such as their parents, their schools, the communities, and their other mentors. So it's an important, these data are important for all of those reasons.
We're ready for our next question.
I have no further questions.
Since there are no further questions, I wish to thank you all for participating in today's media briefing. For more information about the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, please visit www.cdc.gov/healthyyouth/YRBS. A transcript of today's telebriefing will be available later this afternoon. Follow-up questions. If you have any follow-up questions, please contact CDC's main press office at 404-639-3286. This concludes our media briefing, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining. You may disconnect at this time.